I want to first say welcome to everybody that's come tonight, despite the bad weather today. Thank you for coming because I know you care about Street Health. I especially want to thank Kathy Hartle, who drove a very long way in the first snowstorm of the season. I'm Jane Cowley. I'm a past employee of Street Health. Kathy Hartle is also a past employee and past executive director of the organization. We are both going to be moderating the meeting tonight. Over the past 4 or 5 years, 35 staff have left Street Health. Most of them, many of them, have left because of the bullying and harassing behavior of the employer. Many of us left letters and had exit interviews describing the toxic environment of the organization and the impact that it was having on programs and the impact especially it was having on the people that we were meant to serve. Nothing was done. It's years later, and things have gotten worse. But I am hopeful that at tonight's meeting, that this will be a catalyst for making change, and I'm hopeful that we will be heard. Before we begin, I'd like to first talk about expectations of participation in tonight's meeting. I understand that it's emotionally charged for many of us, and it's very personal for many of us. So I'm going to ask everybody to please adhere to three things. I'd like us all to listen to each other. I'd like us to not interrupt. And I'd like us to not make personal attacks. I'm mindful that there is at least one child in this room, and my understanding is that there is a past staff that might be bringing her baby. So can we please be mindful of that? In terms of tonight's agenda, Kathy Hartle is going to begin by speaking about the Friends of Street Health, the reason that we began organizing, and the work that we're doing. After she introduces that, we have a panel of wonderful speakers up here that are going to speak to the history of Street Health and the ideological roots of the organization and what has occurred over the last 3 years that has threatened to destroy that ideology. After our speakers, we are going to invite anybody who wishes to speak to please come to the mic at the side of the room. We will limit you to 3 minutes. We want everybody to have a chance to speak. So please respect Kathy and I if we need to cut you off. We will cut you off after 3 minutes. At the end of the meeting, after everybody has had a time to speak, we're going to talk about next steps and the organizing that is going to continue to happen to address the injustice that's occurring at Street Health. Again, I thank all of you for coming. I know you're here because you care deeply about the organization. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to echo Jane's comments and thank you all for coming out. It's great to see so many friends of Street Health here in the room. I'm Kathy Hartle, and like many people here tonight in this room, my experience of working at Street Health was one of the pivotal work experiences of my life. It was a cutting-edge organization that charted previously uncharted territory, and it was exciting to be there. Staff meetings were lively and creative brainstorming sessions where we planned campaigns to improve conditions for homeless people, whether it be taking on the city or the province or Toronto Public Health, unscrupulous landlords. Almost everything I know about political organizing, I learned from my colleagues at Street Health. And it was there that I learned that health is political. Many things have changed at Street Health. The majority of board members no longer have homelessness experience. Important programs are lost. And I want to thank Carrie Gregorio and her friends for the graphic up here behind me. Experienced staff are gone. Working conditions are very difficult for the advocates that remain. The situation has been very bad for about 3 years, and when it deteriorated profoundly at the end summer, a group of former staff who feel the same way about street health that I do, who love street health, came together to form the Friends of Street Health. In the past 3 months, we have written letters expressing our concerns to the board. The only response that we've had formally is a somewhat patronizing letter stating, "Mind your own business, everything's okay." We requested a meeting with board members and were rebuffed. Friends of Street Health now includes other allies who recognize street health's importance in the homelessness sector and who lament its current political weakness and regressive behavior towards the political staff. We have helped organize 3 public rallies outside Street Health because we know and respect the progressive workers who have been driven out, and we want to support what is left of the political staff because the way they are being treated is a social justice issue and we cannot stand by and watch it happen. Some have said it is too late to save the heart of Street Health, but we will not give up. We have only just begun. And I want to draw your attention, I'm sure others will speak to this, to the next public rally, which will be next Tuesday, December the 15th at noon in front of Street Health. And we're hoping that if we get a good response from the board after tonight and at that rally next week, that that will be the end of it. But we are quite prepared to keep going into the new year, into the spring, as long as we have to go. We are prepared here tonight to hear the concerns of the community regarding street health. We will listen to all comments, but I want to be clear from the beginning. The Friends of Street Health supports the unionized workers who have no contract, who have no workplace protection. We support Gaetan Haru, who's going to speak in a minute, and we will fight for Street Health to regain its current, its previous respected reputation in this community. And now it is with mixed emotions, actually, that I'm going to turn the microphone over to Gaetan Haru.
In 1837, Toronto's first poorhouse was built in this community. It was here for about 10 years. By the 1930s, the House of Industry, as it was called, was offering 25,000 families outdoor relief. It was the agency, it was a welfare in Toronto for almost 100 years, run by very conservative people. What happened in 1832 and up until the winter of 1833 is the unemployed and the poor began to organize because they were made, many of them, to walk 5 to 6 miles to go on Elm Street, where the House of Ministry was for a long time until they closed it down. And they complained to the House of Ministry and said, "Why are you making us walk 5 to 6 miles to get our supplies? We are demeaned by walking down these streets with these sacks of food and people see us. We want work and you make us do this." So what they did is they fought. They fought for a voucher system, and in the end they won. In the spring of 1933, they won what they called a voucher system, and they were able to get the voucher system and get groceries in their own communities, and then have to trek 5 to 6 miles to get their food. So why would I talk about something that happened in 1933, about poor and unemployed people having to march that far to get their food? Have we learned anything since 1933? It seems that my employer, Mary McGowan, and the ED of Street Health do not understand that forcing a large sector of the population to walk, I think we measured as 5 miles. They want to move me to Scarborough. What they wanted to do. That they don't see a problem with that. And when I was first informed on October 14th, that's what was happening. And I said, well, wait, let's talk about this. This doesn't make sense. I work 30 hours at Street Hub. I have clinics for 7 hours. I see people every day. How will they see me? Laura Cowan refused to talk to me. I asked her. I wrote to her. She refused. My employer talked to me, but refused to discuss this decision. So I was given an ultimatum. Either you come on December 7th to Scarborough, or you'll be fired. So what I did, what they did on last Friday, is they took all my stuff away. They took my files, they took my the mail that I had for people, and they took my computer, and they moved it to Scarborough. On Monday morning, where I've been with a whole bunch of guys for the last 3 days, I set up my table and my chair in front of Street Health, and that's where I've been for the last 3 days. And I have to admit, if you're going to get fired, because I knew this might be coming, it's one of the best ways to get fired. The support that I got from the people that were out there on the streets was unbelievable. In terms of how they talked about this. Everyone understood. Michelle, Brian, Al, everyone understood. Danny, that came by, understood what the problem was. Every worker I talked to understands the problem with this move. So why is it happening? Why is Street Health a neighborhood link? Why is Laura Cowan an American? Why are they continuing to insist that I go there? So what happened is today, I was informed by my union that I've been fired. Apparently I was fired yesterday, but I got news today through a letter. So why? Why will Street Health and neighborhood not, like everyone else, understand the common sense that moving this office all the way like across town will create hardship to people? Why can't they understand that? In order to understand that, we have to understand what's been going on at Street Health for the last 3 years. And I want to make it clear here that the right to organize in a workplace is fundamental. Fundamental. For 3 years, I watched my co-workers get intimidated, harassed. I watched new workers openly organize to try and decertify the union. While management condoned that behavior, I watched people get sick, and I kept silent for a long time. For too long, actually. Because I think too many good people left. Too many people did that. So what happened is on October 9th, and we did this only because, we were only able to do this because the Friends of Street Health came out and did this and talked about what was going on. So myself and 5 of my co-workers wrote a letter to the Street Health Board saying, you must understand that something is going on here, it's very serious, and this is why we're writing you. And that was significant because people might not know, but Laura Cowan and Street Health are partners with the PAVE project, the project I work with. And we're directly connected to Street Health. I am. Not just by physically, by being there for the last 10 years, but also through a project. So we wrote that letter. That letter, which was not meant for my employer, made its way immediately to my employer. Within a few days, I was told I had to move. I had to go. No discussion, And that's what's happening. And it's been an odd situation. I'm almost done. It's been an odd situation in terms of working in an agency that I've known for over 20 years. I've known Street Health and worked with around issues. I've been there 10 years. And it's a weird situation to be in an agency for the last 6 weeks where you can't even discuss the fact that I'm leaving. And I wish, Brother Lennox, I wish I would have talked to you about this, and we could have talked about this before this, before all this shit is going on. But but for some reason, we're not allowed to talk about what's going on in that agency. And it's disturbing that we can't have these frank discussions about what's going on. And it's disturbing for me to know that some workers have been asked by Laura Cowan to cover my clinics, to go to those clinics, to give service to the clients. I have nothing against people getting service to the clients, but when my own co-workers in the pay program are not told about it, when my own co-workers are not asked about it, when my own workers are not, my co-workers are not told what is happening to the mail, what is happening to those clinics, I'm very, very disturbed by that. That Laura is having this discussion with some of the staff there, but we can't even get that information. I'm very disturbed by that. We should all be disturbed by that. So I'm going to end there. I'm going to end by really thanking, by the way, the many, many homeless men and women that came by today. Yesterday, over 140 people signed a petition. 140 people that came by. Nancy from the Ontario was bringing me coffee and toast to the table. The postman was shaking my hand outside, the one who's been able to deliver mail for 21 years. This is a community fight. This is a fight in a very small community. And it's very local. And we know each other, and we talk to each other. And we must continue that. And the best thing that we ever did was to talk about what's happening inside Street Health outside. This is a long time coming, this public meeting. Thank you.
No surprise, 1989 to 1993, and like Kathy Hartle said, we were co-workers at the time, it changed my life. It made me become who I am as a nurse and as a person. I'm here today because of major concerns about the demise of Street Health's history and passion, and it didn't just happen this week. We've been watching it for a few years. Street Health began and it grew out of the community. The philosophy was one that located services and people in the community so that we could see things as they were happening and look upstream to fight for the solution. Advocacy, especially systemic advocacy, was the rule. We had to do it. Even when we were shy and nervous and didn't know how to talk to City TV when they came knocking at the door, Diane Baker, the founder of Street Health, made us do it. And it was our co-workers, like Kathy said, that really taught us everything we know about community organizing and activism. Knowing what was going on meant speaking to the media, it meant press conferences, it meant being witnesses at inquests and public inquiries, it meant organizing and going to demonstrations and deputations at City Hall. And I'm going to give you a sense of what some of that work involved and what it led to. And I don't want to discount some of you, some of the faces in the room were also part of this. But Street Health was at the core, in many cases, of these kinds of pieces of work. We may take condoms for granted now in the city of Toronto, but But Street Health and OSA here in the front row is one of the first AIDS outreach workers in the city, along with Eric German, who can't be here tonight. They led the fight for HIV prevention work that now means that there are funded programs, funded services, a needle exchange that Toronto Public Health began, and major funding around HIV prevention in the homeless population. Street Health Nurses at that time formed, over 20 years ago, the Street Nurses Network that brought together isolated nurses working frontline to share critical information. And I'll tell you something, when SARS came along, that was absolutely life-saving. The nurses fought for special quarantine isolation locations for people. The staff worked on issues of health cards. We now understand that people that are homeless have trouble getting a health card, get treated badly when they don't have one. So Street Health worked on that. It led to a major funded program across the province, especially in Toronto, of a mobile kiosk that then evolved into something else where the homeless people could get health cards. That naturally led to the workaround ID. This was a natural progression. Street Health worked and was always working on helping people get their birth certificates, their social insurance numbers, their land and papers, and that work led to, a funded project, the paid project, and this ID Safe project, which Gaetan is obviously, you know, he's working on ID. Street Health staff, many of them worked on coalitions. When conditions at Seton House became visibly horrific, and for example, people would be kicked out on weekends and on statutory holidays, and there would be no shower curtains between where men were showering. Conditions like that, when there was violence and there was even deaths at Seton House, Street Health held a public inquiry to expose those conditions that led to many, many reforms. When homeless people began dying, and Street Health began knowing who those people were. And again, for example, Gaetan walking through a park and discovering that somebody well-known in the homeless community had died. Street Health was part of a public inquiry along with many other agencies here called One Is Too Many. When TB began surfacing, people did not just sit back. The nurses began working with the other staff to form a group, a coalition. Many members are here, the TB Action Group. It was that kind of work that led to a major inquest into TB deaths, but it also led to major funding, major new funding for Toronto Public Health to do directly observed therapy for people who were homeless, who needed their medication. Police violence. Street Health was an active member, again, along with some people here, of the Coalition Against Police Violence. And when that work was happening, you can be sure there was a retreat from police in terms of obvious physical attacks on homeless people. The Toronto Coalition Against Homelessness. That coalition led and pushed for funding for Savard House, the harm reduction program at the annex, and that was all linked again to the freezing death inquest. Street Health was at the core of something like 26 organizations that formed a coalition that came together and had standing at that inquest into the freezing deaths. It is why we have some of these programs now. It is why we had a homeless advisory committee for maybe 10, 15 years at City Hall. It is why we were able to form the Toronto Disaster Relief Committee and declare homelessness a national disaster. Now, I am a co-founder of that, but you should know that many Street Health staff, board members were involved in that. They were co-founders. Barrett German, Steve Lane, who was a board member, Paula Tukey, who's a staff member still, Gaetan Aru, Marisa Dongo, who's a staff member at Street Health to this day. That led to $1 billion in a new national homeless program, money that went all across the country to fuel and beef up homeless services, outreach programs, shelters, the standards. How often does Canada get a new national program? Some of you will know it as Skippy. It's now called HPI. That was landmark, and it was because Street Health as an agency supported their workers in that work. Now, TDRC also led to the opening of many, many shelters. It was involved with Street Health fighting for the opening of the Moss Park Armory, several times. The Fort York Armory. Doctors Hospital was opened as an emergency shelter. Princess Margaret was opened as an emergency shelter. It could go on and on. Many reforms. And Street Health also bolstered our work at Tent City. There is no question the amount of work that happened at Tent City. At least six health organizations were involved and were all needed to be involved in supporting Tent City. And Street Health was one of them. And you know what it led to? It led again to a pilot program, the rent supplement program, that housed anybody from Tent City that wanted the housing. And that was essentially everybody. And not one person said, oh, let me go back to live at the Home Depot lot, right? You haven't seen any tents go up there, right? Well, actually, there were a couple for a while, but... So that advocacy was blended into everything everyone did at Street Health. And it also included challenging, like we're doing today, other organizations historically in the downtown core that got out of line. That included historically Regional Park Health Center, and I can say that because I worked their way back. And I can say that the challenges really helped turn that agency around to one of the best. It included challenging the Friendship Center when things went amok and a whole bunch of others. So that's what we're supposed to do in the community when the agency that's supposed to be about us and for the people goes awry. So today, Gaetan, who, you know, we all know is like the most loved and most important advocate in the downtown core, is being forced out, has been forced out. How does this happen? Well, it's a collective loss of memory, loss of internal transparency, and loss of democratic processes. Why do we still not have 50% of the board at Street Health who are homeless or who have been homeless? Why are staff and clients not involved to the extent they were in the past in terms of evaluating the executive director? How do homeless people today influence the direction of the agency? Now, with respect to unions, again, just to reiterate, workers have a democratic right in Canada to organize a workplace union. And they are allowed to support unions. And in the past, Street Health has never minded receiving money from unions. Take note. Unions know that homelessness is sometimes caused by lack of worker protection, which is why we all need to work upstream to prevent any more job loss at Street Health. It's important for us to look after the workers. There are many, many good workers still there, and they need protection. I'm going to put out something that I don't think has been spoken publicly, but I'm going to speak to it because the last 2 days when I was outside of Street Health with Gaetan, many homeless people came and talked to me about it. They want to know, and I don't know the answers, they want to know why the board of directors and the management at Street Health was able to purchase a house on the south side, right across from Street Health. They maybe understand the why, but how in these recessionary times could they spend money on perhaps a $500,000 building? I don't know the price, that's what I've been told. And why is it now for sale? Where's the transparency? How can that happen? And what's it all about? Especially at a time when some workers are still only paid, I understand, about $20 an hour. Pretty bad for some of the workers there. So I'm going to end on that, or less than that, and I'm going to end on that and turn it back to Jane. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Our next speaker is John Andrus. John is the current chair of the Recession Relief Coalition, a long-time solid ally of homeless survey agency, also the senior vice president of Research Capital, and I'll turn it over to John.
Thank you. I started dealing with Street Health in 1993 when I was a snot-nosed broker at a firm called Andrus Hatch in Hetherington. And I thought I could end homelessness by handing out sleeping bags. And I honestly did. I thought, you know, somebody's cold, they're on the street, give them a sleeping bag, they'll be warm, problem solved, I could walk away. And Street Health and the workers at Street Health were one of the main reasons that I became an advocate. Because I realized that it wasn't enough to give out a sleeping bag. It wasn't enough to give somebody a hot meal. It wasn't enough to give somebody a shelter bed. It wasn't enough for a street nurse to patch a wound or to treat chronic bronchitis or to give advice on where an HIV clinic might be. That maintains somebody, but really it maintains them in the condition that they currently are in. It doesn't stop someone who's homeless from being homeless. That person will still be homeless with that sleeping bag or with that Band-Aid or with that meal. And that the only cure to the disease of homelessness is advocacy. Because the cure is not the agencies, it's not the sleeping bags, it's not the street nurses, it's the advocacy. Because the cure is political. Because homelessness, I believe, could be ended, but it has to be political decisions that end homelessness. Which brings me back to Street Health and to Gaytan. And if you believe that the cure to homelessness is ultimately political and that advocacy is medicine, why on earth is Street Health, which its reputation is based on advocacy, they are the agency that is known as the advocates of the downtown East Core of Toronto. Why are the advocates, one after another, being pushed out? It just doesn't make sense. And why is Gaytan, who is the advocate's advocate, who is probably the most effective voice for the people that have no voice, who's really the conscience of the downtown, who's the person that at every council meeting, at every committee meeting, at every community meeting is there representing his people. They're not the people of Scarborough, they're the people here. And he's been doing it for 20 years, and he's been doing it brilliantly. And why on earth do you want that voice silenced? It makes no sense, and it's a huge step backwards. And, you know, I just hope and I pray that there's a reconsideration here, and there's a reconsideration of the direction Street Health is going, because for Street Health to become nothing more than a provider of service would be a tragedy, and would really almost make Street Health irrelevant, because they're not doing anything the Children Health Center isn't doing. They're not doing anything that St. Mike's isn't doing. What makes Street Health special, and what has always made Street Health special, is the advocacy. And please, please, and I know there are a couple of directors here, take it back to your board, because by getting rid of the advocacy, you might as well be getting rid of Street Health.
Introduce Zoe Dodd, community worker and former Street Health Hepatitis C worker extraordinaire. I guess, actually, I just want to start off by saying this is probably the hardest thing to speak to because for me it is extremely emotionally charged. I am a former Street Health staff. I loved working at Street Health. I loved working with the staff at Street Health, and I loved working in the community of Sherbourne and Dundas. And and I was the first Street Health staff to
actually pushed out after union organizing, and I believe I was pushed out and targeted because of my involvement in union organizing. And I am proud that I helped organize a union at Street Health, because the treatment of some of us staff was extremely unfair. In 2004, I decided to go back to school, and it was a really difficult choice. I had always grown up poor, I had never had a lot of money, and people did not know why I ever moved to Toronto. I came here from the Yukon, and I never told my new friends anything about me, and it wasn't until I started school, and I knew about Street Health, and I knew about the activism in the community, and I was committed and wanted to make a change around public health, and I knew that we could make social change, and I wanted to work in a social justice framework, and I really wanted to work in harm reduction. And I went and I asked my friend who knew about Street Health, and I was like, you have to get me my student placement there. I really, really want to work there. And Lori didn't want me there at first because she had a bad experience with a student from my school. I'm outing her. But they took me on, and I was so excited about that experience. And I went back to school, and I did a class, I taught my class about harm reduction, and it was the first time in my life that I actually outed myself about my history of drug use and homelessness, and it was something I kept secret when I moved here and could not share with people. And I did not feel ashamed because I was surrounded by people who were working there with lived experience. And that was so important and vital to the organization of Street Health. And it wasn't just lip service. They really wanted to employ people who had experience like mine because they knew that we had the expertise to talk to other drug users, to talk to other people who were homeless, and to have those conversations. And I got to work with people who were the best advocates I've ever met, who mentored me, and who really believed in me. And Lori was my manager at the time, and she was like, you want to do a Hexy group? And I was like, going out in the community doing outreach. And what I learned on the streets was that people were really affected by Hep C. We have 250,000 people living in Canada with hepatitis C, and the federal government does not give a shit about people with hepatitis C because they're the most marginalized people in our community. And she asked me if I wanted to be that worker, and I sure as hell did. And I took it, and I ran with it, and I started my first group, and I had my first group at All Saints Church, and she said, don't worry, it'll be okay. Nobody came. But it was okay. Because I stayed committed, and I had to close the group because there was too many people coming, and I learned that people didn't have access to treatment, and Street Health allowed me to go out there and knock on doors and sit at committees and get things open for people. And now we have a hepatitis C program in the community we didn't have before, where people have access to 3 health centers, to specialists, to nurses, to doctors, to community workers, and we have Hep C funding in this province, and we have Hep C funding federally, but a lot of that came from Street Health's work and its long-time work of 2001. That I got to work at Street Health. It was a life-changing experience. If you had asked me if I was going to make more than $10,000 a year in my life, I would say, fuck no. And now I do. Sorry for swearing. But that was important to me because I'd always lived in poverty, and I really wanted to be able to survive in Toronto, and it is a really difficult city to survive in. But I also wanted to do something that I'm extremely passionate about. I'm still a Hep C worker. I work at another site. And I'm really happy that I'm working there, but I miss Street Health. What I also think is a real shame is that Street Health does not have Hep C workers in their center anymore. This is a big loss for the community. And it was never discussed about how that is going to impact the community. I never had an exit interview. Nobody helped me shut down the program. Nobody seemed concerned about what was going to happen to the clients. Nobody asked me. And I was asking, hey, you know, what should I do with all of this? What should I do with the program? What are we going to tell the community? We didn't tell them anything. And it was a major disruption in a lot of people's lives. And there's people in this room that I've worked with for years that I know and love and care about. And that was the part of it, being connected to the community. That was one of the best things I learned. And that's something that's being lost in Street Health. The people don't have the same connection to the community that they did once before. And I see people now, and I wonder, where are you connected, and who are you seeing, and what are you doing, and why am I still working with you when I don't work at your agency anymore? Because people become an extension of our families,
to separate, that I'm not part of a community when I feel like I do belong to it. And one current staff member called me up at work and they said to me, "Street Health, what's going on at Street Health is personal and it's internal and it's nobody's business." And I said to her, "No, Street Health started because 23 years ago, homeless people saw nurses as people who could be an advocate for them, and Street Health was supposed to be committed to the community, and it's the community that's supposed to be involved in the shaping of Street Health, and the community was always involved in the programs and the development of our programs, and it was community members that worked on staff, and it's community members that sat on board, and Street Health sure as hell belongs to the community." The corner of Parliament and Dundas, once known as the first housing project in Canada, will be a site of condos and homeowners and a Sobeys and a Tim Hortons and a Royal Bank, something this neighborhood has never seen. And that will change the face of this community as the person across the street who owns all of those buildings sees the land skyrocket and their ability to sell it off. And what will Street Health do in the midst of this change in gentrification that's happening to all of our neighborhoods? And when you send someone like Gaetan to Scarborough, when I tell clients about that, they say, "Oh, yeah, just like us, because we're being shoved off to Scarborough too." And they see it as bullshit as well. And I think, you know, what saddens me about what happened with Gaetan is that that never would have happened a year ago. That staff would have rallied around him. He would not have been out there by himself. He would have never gotten to this point because we were so committed to each other, so committed to our programs, so committed to keeping each other. When I was about to lose my job the first time, which happened on December 6, 2007, I was given a layoff notice at the same time the building across the street was purchased. Staff said, "What can we do? We will give up part of our salary. We will unite together to keep this program because we see it as effective and vital in our community." But there was a willingness to let it go. And staff said to each other, "How are we going to keep this?" And it's that unity that I feel is so sad that it's lost, that staff are pitted against each other and they're not together working together to keep vital services, because it's not about you, it is about the community that's affected by the loss of these services. And that's what it's really about. It is about a paycheck on some levels, but on the other levels, why are you in this work? We are only in this work because poverty exists, and if poverty didn't exist, I would be happy not to have this job. Anyway, I just want to say that, you know, I value the time that I had at Street Health. And I know that my name comes up a lot at meetings. And if the board of directors would love to have an exit interview, I think exit interviews are really important, not only for the staff that work there, but for the learning experience of everyone involved. And I would love to have an exit interview because I never had one. But I finished at Street Health on April 14, 2009. And I think out of all the years that I did there, I earned that respect to have that. And I would have to say one more thing. It is a human right that we can organize in our workplaces. And it is a right that we are treated equitably and fair, that we are given fair wages, and not just lip service, because you are a person living with lived experience. That if you really value the experience of us, then you pay us equitably, and you give us the same security that you give everybody else. Because that was part of the issue of working there, that we were not given that security, and that is something that we were fighting for, and I'm really happy that my colleagues came on, and that, you know, we all saw the target, and maybe we weren't involved in all of that targeting, maybe it wasn't targeted at you, but we came united with each other, and when we voted for a union, it was 16-6, and we were still really nice to each other, even to the people who didn't vote for it, we knew who they were. But it was okay, because that was one thing about Street Health, is that, you know, we were going to work together, that we would care about the community, and that was our commitment. So I really hope, and I thank the board of people who are here from the board of directors, and I thank the current staff that are here today, because I think you have a lot to learn from a meeting like this. These are your peers. These are people who care about the history, they care about the community, and they care that Street Health survives, but that Street Health survives in a way that does the work that it used to do, where it does systemic advocacy, that it cares about the community, and it gets back out there and does its job. So thank you very much.
Can you imagine?
why anybody in the world would let this woman go. That's crazy. So now I'm going to introduce Kelly O'Sullivan. Kelly is a labor and community organizer and the president of QP Local 4308. Kelly?
Thanks, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Kelly O'Sullivan. I'm president of QP 4308. We're a multi-workplace local, and we represent five workplaces, and one of them is Street Health, as well as Central Neighborhood House, Senior People's Resources in North Toronto, Toronto Homemaking Services, and Prisoners with HIV and AIDS Support Action Network. So in April of 2008, the workers at Street Health decided to organize, and a vote was held. Zoe's mentioned what the vote was. It was 16-6. So it was clear that there was strong support to have a union in the workplace. Prior to the vote happening, staff at Street Health outreached to QP and to myself to talk about unionizing and the reasons for unionizing. And one of the reasons they approached me, and this is, I think, a theme that you'll hear tonight, is because this is my community as well. I live in this community and I work in this community. Central Neighborhood House is a sister agency just down the street. This isn't about, you know, QP coming in and being parachuted in. People reached out to QP because they knew the work of QP 4308 and where we stood on issues around social justice and respect in the workplace. Once the workers got organized and won the vote, they had a choice about what kind of structure they wanted. They chose to join QP 4308, and I'm proud of that decision on the part of the workers. But it's been a struggle since then for those workers. From the outset, the employer, the executive director, made it clear she did not want a union in the workplace. That cannot be disputed. That was unequivocal. She stated it in the staff meeting. She encouraged people not to join the union, and she put it in writing for them as well. So that's not something that can be disputed. That was clear from the outset. And the reason for people wanting to organize in a union was clear as well. It was about fairness, justice in the workplace, equity, and more increasingly protection for workers that felt like they were being treated differently and targeted because of challenging and questioning decisions that were being made in the workplace. Challenging and questioning should be a healthy thing in any organization. Unfortunately, more and more that became something that was no longer acceptable. Since April 2008, many staff have left the organization. There were layoffs. In Zoe's case, the program was transferred to another agency. And over that period of time, that meant that new staff were hired. I don't claim to speak here today for all staff at Street Health. There are divisions within the workers. That was clearly demonstrated. Some workers chose in August of 2009 to actually file for decertification. That means they were trying to say that the union should no longer be in the workplace and to have a vote so workers could have the choice of doing that. Legally, they couldn't do that because of time periods. But the question becomes as to why workers would want to do that. And you have to ask yourself, why would workers want to decertify a union? I believe that that has, and we have filed actually a labor board complaint with that, saying that there's been interference, intimidation, and coercion by the management at Street Health in those activities. A staff meeting was held. There were legitimate concerns that some staff had around strategies we employed in trying to get a fair contract. Those staff had legitimate concerns. I don't dispute that. What was not acceptable was that the employer chose to hold a meeting that was really a union meeting and allowed those staff to voice those concerns. Other staff who may not have shared the same opinion could not speak out at that meeting. It was not an equitable meeting. It was not a safe space. At that meeting, a staff person talked about decertifying, and the employer applauded that call.
The frustration a worker must feel to get to the point of wanting to decertify is, to me, I can't understand it and I can't claim to understand it. What I do feel, though, is that there was an atmosphere, and there is an atmosphere that is being created in that workplace by the management, the senior management, that continues to polarize and create divisions. And that's truly unfortunate, that both groups of workers are being placed in that situation. Some workers there do not feel the impact of what is happening. Once again, that's a legitimate feeling. That's a legitimate experience. But it does not negate the other workers who are truly, profoundly being negatively impacted by a poisoned work environment. Because things are okay for me doesn't mean that I get to turn to you and say, well, you should just either put up with it or get out. That's not the answer. The answer is to make it a workplace that's healthy and safe for everyone. Our approach to bargaining at Street Health was idealistic, I guess, given the circumstances that we entered into. We had an open process for our bargaining proposals. Our entire bargaining package was presented to the membership, and every single article was gone through and agreed to by the membership to present to the employer. We put forward a package based on what we believed the culture and the philosophy of Street Health should provide. An organization that stands for social justice and equity should extend that to their workers in a collective agreement. That is what we were seeking when we started this process. An agency that was founded on the understanding that a traditional approach to health care for people who were homeless surely would understand as well that taking a traditional approach to labor management issues was not going to be productive. But in fact, from the outset of bargaining, that's what we were told by the employer and their consultant, that they would not entertain and they were not interested in any type of collaborative, open relationship in this workplace, that it would be a traditional labor management relationship. And if any of you understand what that means, that generally means that there's tends to be conflict then in traditional labor management relations. It's set up for that purpose. And so that's where we approached and where we started off in bargaining. It took us 12 days before the board intervened, thanks for pressure from the Friends of Street Health and their campaign, till the board intervened and got the employer finally meeting with us again face to face. It took us actually 12 days to get agreement on an article that said employees could photocopy information from their personnel file. That took us 12 days to finally get agreement on that language. We now still face, in bargaining, challenges. Instead of a collective agreement that we hope would reflect the innovative reputation and culture and history of Street Health, we're fighting and struggling to keep the rights that workers have. Our alternatives to layoffs is something that they don't want to see in the collective agreement in the way that it is in their employee policy manual. What message does that send to you as a worker? When you were non-unionized, you could have this, but now that you've got a union, you're not getting it anymore. I know the message that that sends to me as the local president. That sends a message to me is that you're going to pay the price for unionizing. And the rights that you did have aren't going to be in this collective agreement, and that's part of the price that you're going to pay. And I want to focus on alternative to layoffs, because I think that needs to be understood. Zoe talked about this, where workers were willing to take a reduction in their own hours to keep a staff position. Because alternative to layoffs isn't about keeping a worker in a job alone. Those jobs are services and programs to a community that needs that support and resources. So when we talk about a layoff and trying to find a way so that that program is not lost, That is what's underlying that language for us. Yes, yes, it's about job protection, but it's also about saying we're not going to see another service shut down in Sherbourne and Dundas neighborhood. Enough is enough. The other approach that we've seen with the employer, once again, that approach of collaboration, things that are happening now. I have a job, my job description is going to be changed. I get an opportunity to provide some feedback and input because, after all, I'm the one that does the job, right? I may have some insight into the changes you're making and why, you know, the changes might be good, how they could be better, etc. So that was something that we proposed, which got quite a strong reaction that, once again, yes, that would happen in the workplace, but it would not be in a collective agreement. It would happen sometimes or not at all. Sometimes or not at all. Sometimes or not at all. So that was our choice, to allow it to happen in an arbitrary manner where one individual could choose to give the opportunity to a staff person or choose not to give it to another staff person and not be accountable for their decision, or we could not have it in the collective agreement. So have it sometimes or not at all. Finally, what's happened, and some people will be aware of this, we have a flyer that's going out. The Labor Board complaint is ongoing. There's not been a hearing date set yet, so that's outstanding. But the employer has also asked for what's called a no board. That's a technical labor term. It's really kind of weird way of explaining it, but it basically says you ask for the labor board to actually put in a board of arbitration and all this. It never happens. What does happen is that a conciliation officer issues a no board report. It basically means the parties are at an impasse. They're unable to reach an agreement on the collective agreement. The no board has been requested. We don't have the official date of when it's being issued. It could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be next week. What it also does, though, with a no board is it starts a clock ticking. You have 17 days after it's formally issued by the Labor Board to reach a collective agreement. After those 17 days, either party can take action. The union, if they have taken a strike vote, could take strike action. This union, this local, is not taking a strike vote. They don't intend to take a strike vote. We're there to bargain with the employer. We're there to reach a fair collective agreement without any disruption or further impact on programs and services in our community. The other side of the coin is that the employer can lock workers out. They can shut the doors. I do not believe that the employer will do that, but the reality is they have that right. They have chosen to exercise the no board request to have that right, to have that power. For some of us, it feels like that threat to us to either take whatever crappy piece of collective agreement language they want us to take, or face the uncertainty of not only of our employment, but from knowing the workers at this agency, probably even greater, the potential impact of what it would mean to this organization if that action would be taken and there would be a loss of services. So that's what we sit across the table. We go to that table on December 16th and 17th. We sit across the table from an employer where we know we can't actually take any type of strike action because we're not taking a vote. We know we can't pull that trigger. But that person sitting across the table from us that we're supposed to have an equitable bargaining relationship with could, if we don't reach agreement, shut the doors, if they choose. We have no control over that. We have no voice in that. We have no way to impact that except by taking whatever piece of crap they put on the table to us. That's not the position that workers should have to be facing at an organization like Street Health. Go to some corporate company and play those games if that's, you know, like this is Street Health. This is a community-based organization founded on principles of social justice and equity. How did we get to this point? I'm not sure, but I hope you'll come out on December 15th at 12 noon so that we can have some power on the other side of that table by having you stand in solidarity, shoulder to shoulder with us as we demand a fair contract now. Let's put this to rest. Let's start rebuilding Street Health and moving forward. We want Gaetan back where he needs to be in this community. We cannot allow the power of the few to outweigh the needs of the many. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. It's my pleasure to introduce Bob Rose, West End Toronto Drug Addict Advocate, and certainly a longtime friend of Street Health.
Thank you. I come from Park in the West End a long way. You know, I come here because I love Street Health, and I love the people that I've known who've worked at Street Health. And I'm going to try to speak a little bit about, there are many other people out there in other agencies who feel the same as I. And we are all connected here together in this, and the destruction that's taking place in Street Health is having an impact out in the community, and I want to talk about that. Because just like, as Kathy said, a number of people said, you know, working at Street Health sort of changed their lives or made them who they are. Well, knowing and working with the people from Street Health has had the same impact upon me. And I think it's changed my life. It's changed how I worked over the years. And I'll tell you why. In fact, it's unbelievable to me that I could be at a community.
Thank you. A lot of you know that Gaetan's work, technically speaking, is his job in the day-to-day has been to help people get replacement ID. And when I was thinking about that, I was thinking about how ironic that is, because when people are losing their ID, people are on the streets and they're losing their ID, it's one of the greatest signs of chaos and insecurity in people's lives. And you can replace ID 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, but if you never deal with the underlying chaos and insecurity, you haven't done a thing. You can run 8 million ID clinics. You can run clinics to the end of time, and you haven't dealt with the core issue because people are still losing their ID in unsafe shelters. People are getting their ID stolen by the cops. People aren't getting ID at all because of their status issues, and on and on and on it goes. And Gaetan and Street Health, Gaetan is one of those people who brings, he takes away from the level of chaos and insecurity in people's lives. And Street Health has served that role of decreasing the amount of chaos and insecurity in people's lives, because on the one hand, of fighting the big politics, right? And pushing for real changes to happen. And also, on a community level, from being there, from creating those relationships. And when Gaetan's doing his work and other people at Street Health have done their work, and agencies more and more have been forced towards this kind of corporate model of depoliticization and dollars and cents and statistical charts that show your value as a worker and your value as an agency in terms of how many health cards you replace this week. There's no box to tick off for somebody like Gaetan. For how many times did Gaetan talk somebody down from a fight in his neighborhood? How many times was Gaetan a shoulder to cry on? How many times was Gaetan and other people at Street Health, how many times were they the help that somebody needed when they were this close to ending things? And that's literal. But I'm not trying to use hyperbole at all.
This is literally, for a lot of people, Gitan and people at Street Health, people that you have those long-term relationships with, when you've been screwed over so many times and often have so little, that's the lifeline. That's what helps people get through in the day-to-day. And it's sure Gitan maybe could run 7 hours of clinics, but it's the 30 hours, right? It's the 60 hours, it's the 20 years. That is what's created those relationships and what's made Street Health what it is and what it was, what it has to be in this community. And for us, like as OCAP, I mean, we've all heard so much about Street Health's history and what an important role it's played politically in this community and in this country, really. And it has been a great, great ally to OCAP over the years. And there's a profound sense of sadness that we have to have this ugly struggle with an agency that's been so, so, so important, and the people within it that have been so vitally important. And at the end of the day, the people who win from this dispute, Street Health doesn't win. Street Health management doesn't win. The people who win are the people who benefit from the fact that struggle at Sherburn and Dundas and struggle within this country has been accentuated by infighting, accentuated by these side struggles that never should have happened in the first place. Sherburn and Dundas is under attack, and it's under attack like it's never been before. And it might not be making the front pages of the paper anymore, but we all in this room know how ugly that battle is and how many hits we've taken over the years. How many hits, how much pain, how many lost lives have occurred in that neighborhood and in this country because of government's failure to deal with these issues. And to see Street Health taken away from that, distracted from that, undermined from what needs to happen, is so tragic. And it's something that I urge us all to see not as one more individual battle that maybe we have the time to engage in, or maybe we don't because there's so many different individual battles, but I urge us to see it as a real indicator of where we are in this neighborhood and where we are in this country and where we want to be as a society. When we fight for Street Health and we fight for Gitan and we fight for the workers, we're fighting for a vision of what we want this neighborhood to look like.
Yes.
What we want our workplaces to look like, what we want our community to look like, what we expect from this country in terms of how it cares for its people. And that's the kind of light and that's the kind of commitment that we need to put into this struggle. Thank you.
And so over here to my right, you can see a microphone stand. There'll be a microphone there in a minute. If you want to just line up behind it, and remember to try to keep your... Oops.
I'm policy that was developed. And all we did, because staff were never consulted on that HR policy, but we went away and we took that same HR policy, took that same HR policy, and we just tweaked it to make it better for staff. And that is what people are fighting about, a policy that already existed. A policy that we made better and consulted on with each other, and we voted on page by page by page, because that organization used to be transparent, and we used to be able to sit around and collectively talk about issues. And suddenly, before we even got to that process, we had sick days that were 18 days, and suddenly it was switched to 10, and arbitrary decisions were being made, and our collective, the HR policy was brought to us, and we knew we needed a collective agreement, that we needed something that wasn't going to be changed, and we wouldn't have arbitrary decisions made. And so that is what is presented before, and that is what they're fighting on, a collective agreement that really is their HR policy. And so when you ask, why is that organization, you know, why is this happening? I have no idea, because Street Health was known as a progressive organization who should have made a progressive collective agreement, that should have been a leader in the community and shown that, yes, we are out there advocating and we believe it inside for the staff that work there who are also struggling as well. That we believe the same thing on the street as we believe inside, because I sure as hell felt like a freaking hypocrite. 2007 Street Health Report was out, and we're reducing our services, and we're telling other agencies to increase theirs. And we needed a fight inside, and that's really unfortunate, because we were so excited when that report was put out, because we should have been fighting out there, not inside.
Get rid of management, it's time.
So I'm just going to take... We've lost all our microphone power, so I'll just ask people to use a big gymnasium-sized voice. Go ahead.
All right. I'd like to ask a question about moving forward. We're going to have a budget for the city of Toronto. There's going to be community service committee meetings. What are we going to push for, given that there's this recession and there's a lot of people that are living in poverty? What can we do to restore funding for all these agencies that are battling for scarcer funding and resources? Thank you.
Anybody want to comment on that?
I could briefly comment on it.
I've been shot 40 years. He's never turned anybody on the street. And I'll tell you that today. He took me off the street.
Right on, Gaetan.
I'd like to try to at least partially answer your question, because to answer it would take hours and hours and hours.
Sure.
But one of the answers is that as communities, and this is a community, and the fact that all of you are here to support Gaetan shows that there's still very much a community here. And as a community, we have to stand up, and we have to speak out, and we have to try to make the politicians accountable. And this is exactly what Street Health has been doing so well over the years. And without Street Health, this community becomes much, much quieter, much more malleable, much easier to manipulate, and much easier for the politicians and the developers to roll over it and turn All Saints and Street Health into condos.
Much defeated, in other words.
Thanks.
Can I just respond to that very quick also, in terms of how do we do this? I know there's a lot of workers in here that I've worked with and stuff, and I learned this a long time ago. But I mean, some of us think that we're the ones that will change the world somehow. That somehow we go in those agencies and we want to do whatever. And I've been lucky, like many of us, you know, that whether it's David Kidd, Kathy Crowe, Eric German, who's not here tonight, and I wish he was here, we're lucky. But the truth is, and I don't know how this happens, you know, but the strength to do this stuff for me, anyways, over has come from some of the workers like Danielle and Paula and Fiona and a whole bunch of people fighting inside. But when I went outside on Monday morning and I took those issues out there and I began to talk to people, like Brian, and then people come and talk, you know, that's how I learned what was going on. That's how I learned. Those are my voices and ears. I don't, you know what happened when I go home to my bed, you know, and Brian goes, he leaves her to go to a shelter, and Al does the same. He has to find a friend and make sure he hopes that he can get in with his friend. And tonight, the same thing, they have to make arrangements. You know, I saw that again. I forget that sometimes, right? I forget that. And as workers, you have to say to your managers, when managers tells you things, when they tell you things that are fucked up, because people have told you that's fucked up, you know that's fucked up. You know what's the most obscene thing about this? And I have to say this. I've been fighting. I've been fighting with Laura Cowan and Mary McGowan now for 6 weeks around this issue. And you know what? And the minute I stepped outside that goddamn agency, I began to understand, you know, that I'm not crazy. Because everyone I talk to, whether it's Brian, Al, Danny, Michelle, co-workers, everyone said, you know what, that doesn't make sense. It's that simple. And somehow, as we work in our agencies, and this is what's happening at Street Health right now, that we're not able to do that. What? A very simple discussion amongst workers, we can't have that. And if we can't have that, if I can't talk to Phil and I can't talk to Amanda, how did that happen? Where is the leadership in that? I don't want to be angry at my coworkers. I don't. Where does the leadership come from? It has to come from the board and it has to come from Laura. It's not there.
There's a large poor black community there, and they probably need services. So, they're just two distinct communities, and they need two different community health units to serve them. Is that happening?
I'll just repeat the question in case people couldn't hear that. The question is, the plan in the Deccan Scarborough was that to serve people in that neighborhood, and does that mean that service in Dundas and Sherbourne would be gone? I guess Gaetan, you're the one that can answer that.
Very quickly, there is service in terms of the service I provide. Some of my coworkers are here today, actually, who offer service in Scarborough. I am not being asked to service people in Scarborough. I was told I will continue to service people at Dundas and Sherbourne for 7 hours. What they're saying, though, is the administration, the 30 hours that I spent there seeing people, I have to do in Scarborough. Which means that all of those people I see during those 7 hours and during the day, I can't see because they either have to walk or find the TTC to get down there. This is not about, you know, if there was an argument, go, we want you to remove you from there, go over there and service people in Scarborough. You're right, everyone needs service, we should all have service. That's not the debate right now. The debate is why are you making people creating this hardship in terms of having an administration office somewhere where the people or the clients don't exist. They're 5 miles away.
Ah, the clients are down here in Germany have done that.
Yes.
Yes, my name is Peter Botch, and I'm a member of Local 3202, a member of the executive of Rural Appeals, and more importantly, I'm a co-worker of Big Office. I'm also a new worker. And I first want to say that here, and I want to lend some support of many members of our local, and especially our project, to Gaetan, and thank Gaetan in front of all of you for fighting back. Thank you, Gaetan. I
Brother Gaetan is fighting for us all. And this didn't need to happen. This didn't need to happen. The reason we work, me and Gaetan work for Neighborhood Link Support Services, that host CID project, there was no need to move Gaetan out of Street Health except the need to bust the union at Street Health. It was the management of Neighborhood Link that said we are going to support to the hilt the management at Street Health, and we will not relent. Damn the clients and damn the service. And that is a sad commentary on Neighborhood Link. My employer also in addressing the Street Health. This is an attack on our clientele, an attack on the work that we do, I think the good work that we've done in the paid project. And in fact, compounded, I just have to let you know that yesterday, before Gaetan was formally fired, they had the indignity to Laura Cowan, the executive director, sent somebody out from Street Health, a worker, I don't call him that, But anyway, a worker out to do our job in a separate company, in effect scabbing on our work, and to train somebody to take over Gaetan's position before they had the dignity to even bother to communicate with him, as I just found out that they did. I just found out now, so even we don't know what's in the works. Shame is absolutely right. Shame on Street Health. Shame on Neighborhood Link Support Services. Shame on all those, on the managements, because they're the problem. We're not the problem. And I just want to say, stand up if you're a frontline worker. We're the ones, as union members, as frontline workers, we're the ones who stand up for the service. Our clients stand up for the service. The management never stands up for the service. That's the class divide in our society, and never forget it. Thank you.
Well, folks, my name's Brian DeBardieu. I've lived in this town here now for about 21 years, and I've had great mentors, great leaders all around me. They've helped me, Kathy Crowe, Kathy Hartle, Gaetan, Danielle. You know, you've all taught me a lot, and you've actually got me jobs. You got me jobs in Street Health. You got me jobs in Regent Park. Kathy Crowe, Kathy Hartle, you gave me references. I started working in St. Mike's for 4 years. You know, I got off the booze for 4 or 5 years working there. And I enjoyed the work. I had a few problems with cancer. I got off that. But what I'm here to talk about, too, is that was the great part of Street Health back then. We had people, nurses, that not just nursed you. They mentored you. You didn't have ID workers that just gave you your fucking ID and shoved you out the door. They talked to you. That was the human part. That was what Street Health was all about. Being human with other humans. And not to go too hard on Lauren Cowan, she was a good director for a few years. I was on the board for 7 years. And she had some great ideas, but mostly she stole them off the staff. And they became her ideas. And they made a lot of money, a lot of publicity for Street Health. And the staff stayed quiet because you know what? The agency was growing and it was getting more respect. So everybody stayed good. I remember for a few years, too, I was asking nurses. We had a rollover, 8 nurses, in like a year and a half. And I kept on asking Sarah and ever the nurses, why are you quitting? And they're always polite about it. But now I think it's really coming to roost, you know. It was a poison environment that they did not want to work. And they had lots of opportunities to go elsewhere. And they didn't leave the neighborhood. They just moved up the road to Sherburne Health Center or Regent Park Health Center, and they got away to fucking Laura. I got a few thoughts about Laura, too, you know. She's a very silly woman. She's friggin' out to lunch. She's devious, conniving. Okay. But yeah, I've seen the organization go downhill so far the last 2-3 years. It's ridiculous. You know, when she's investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in houses, and we can't get a goddamn pair of socks, excuse the language. You know, it's ridiculous. She won't give you a razor. It took years for homeless people to even get into that front lobby of that building, because she's got her sweetheart Lord Forrest that she doesn't want any of them ruining. And now, let's put linoleum floors down there and fucking let them in. It's ridiculous, you know. She wants her little castle. I remember when I was on the board, she wanted to build a second on this second floor in a carriage house and put a bridge across. This is how grandiose this woman thinks. You know, that would cost $500,000. For what? An extra 300 square feet of house? Office? Now, that shows, I talked to the board last night. I talked to 7 of the 9. And I kept on suggesting to them that at least she take a 6-month sabbatical paid. Let her managers manage. Let her workers do their job. Let her come back and see if she can handle it again. I think that would be a great motion for the board to put to Laura, or an ultimatum. And in June, there's 6 board members coming up, and all community members should register. Because any board member we don't want there, we can get rid of. And the first year we don't defeat them in June, we get the first 6. The second year we'll get the other 6. And the board will take over.
The stuff an ID worker does outside of the clinic admin time. And I used to be an ID worker at Street Health, so I just really wanted to clarify it, because I think it really highlights what it is that job does and why it can't be moved. So what you do in a clinic is, as fast as you can, you write, but that's all you do. It's actually not much. You try to be nice to people, but you have to see as many as you can. But the rest of the time, you talk with people about why they don't know their mother's name. You contact Children's Aid Society. You're calling the provinces that they've been rejected from, or the Ontario government that has rejected them from getting their ID, and they need to speak to the client. They cannot speak to you. Those people who are turned down will not have any way of accessing their identification, because they will not be able to go to Scarborough to use the phone to make the long-distance call. They won't be able to get on the computer to write a letter with me trying to explain to the government that they were raised by their grandmother, and that's why they don't know any information. And so many of the people we see have these histories that we're not talking about 1 or 2 people. We're talking about most of the people we see. Now, we could be really shitty workers, and we could just send out a bunch of rejection letters and more, if that's how you want to work, you can do that. But Gaytan doesn't do that. So even down here in the downtown core, people make a choice to see Gaytan over other people, because they know they're going to get rejected, because they always get rejected. And they know that those other people can't call and won't help. Because I worked at Street Health, I was told too many people were coming to the office to see me, that I shouldn't have people in my office. So people know to go to Gaytan. And so the majority of the people he's seeing are these people that really need that service, that absolutely could not go to Scarborough and will never get their ID. So this is a huge move that makes his job impossible. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Tons of postcards up here at the front. Please come and take as many as you need to decide where your support lies, board members. You need to decide what you're going to do. Some people have said that the Friends of Street Health wants to destroy Street Health. This argument has no basis in reality, and to say that impugns the motives of all of the people here in this room. One could not mobilize this many respected, solid, experienced people for any other reason than to save the heart of Street Health, and we will not stop until we are successful. Thank you.
Of about 200 welfare recipients at Metro Hall. That happened yesterday. That's around this ongoing struggle, which Street Health had been so much of a part of, for a special diet and for raising the rates. So please keep your eyes and ears open for more of that to come, as they continue to target people, refuse to process forms, and target a doctor who has been a cornerstone in getting people onto that very, very important supplement. The second thing and last thing,
one more thing, last thing,
I swear, is that OCAP is having an action around TTC fare increases. People may not know this is an ongoing issue with fare increases planned for the next 4 years as well. So please join us at Toronto City Hall, so at Queen and Bay, on Saturday, this coming Saturday, 1 o'clock. No, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's what the book. This book, Malleus,
okay,
is one of the most shameful books ever written and used by the state. Malleus, Malleus. It's Latin, and that's about the only Latin I've heard. I know. Maleficarum.
Malle.
F as in Frank. I C A. R-U-M.
I-U-M?
R-U-M, as in Mary.
Okay.
Have
that's
you heard
great.
Of it?
No, I haven't. That's is this the book you're saying that, that he uses to find who's a heretic?
Yes, this is the book.
Or a witch.
Exactly, as Ruth said. This is the book the church, these churchmen who sat at a table, probably like this.
Yeah.
Yes. Although I love this room, but I'm just twigging.